Thank you for tuning in. It's time for this week's episode of History's Hook with your host, Tom Price. Take it away, Tom.
Hello and welcome to History's Hook, where I guarantee that we'll get you hooked on history. I'm your host, Tom Price. Each week on History's Hook, we'll be bringing you interesting and informative stories from the past in an effort to connect the history in our own backyard to the big events that compose national and world history. We'll explore a new topic every week and bring in experts and eyewitnesses to the events and places we'll be talking about. This is not your high school history class. We're going to make history fun and compelling. We're going to get you hooked. Today, I am joined in the studio by my regular co-host, Murray County historian and president of the African American Heritage Society, Joanne McClellan. Good morning, Joanne.
Good morning, Tom.
Together, we are speaking to the curator of Nashville's Jefferson Street Sound Museum, Mr. Lorenzo Washington. Mr. Washington is a native of East Nashville, where he became an entrepreneur of note and an observer and participant in the Jefferson Street music scene, which has had a tremendous impact upon music and culture all over the world. Mr. Washington's life has been chronicled in his autobiography called Rising Above, The Lorenzo Washington Story, which was published in 2021 by JSM Publishing. Mr. Washington, welcome to History's Hook.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
So you're the curator of the Jefferson Street Sound Museum. We're going to talk about Jefferson Street and the music scene there, but first tell us, how did you come to be the keeper of the Jefferson Street music legacy?
Well, a few of the artists and musicians were really concerned about their legacy on Jefferson Street. And there were so many great musicians and artists that wasn't very well known, but they were great talents and great people. And some of them was my personal friends, like Herbert Hunter, Frank Howard, Marion James, Jackie Shane, and a number of others were personal friends of mine. So I was concerned also about the legacy of Jefferson Street and the legacy of all of these artists. And we used to sit around over at my house where the museum is now, was my home. And I would invite some of the musicians and artists over just to sit around and talk and reminisce about what took place back in the 40s to the 70s. And after a while, they start bringing artifacts over, you know, and we sitting around talking about the artifacts and other things that they were bringing. And so when they would get ready to leave, I said, well, why don't you leave this? It's sitting on the shelf over here so that I can show some other folk. So they started leaving artifacts and other memorabilia at my house. And eventually I had some people to come in and say, you know, you're starting a museum just the way a lot of folks started museums back in the day in your house. And it just went from there and just sort of mushroomed. And with my intent being just to recognize and to make sure other folk recognize the legacy of these artists.
I was a curator for 21 years in political history primarily, but I love the objects. The objects are always the thing that drew me to history. Tell me, what's your favorite object in your collection?
Well, one of the favorites now, I've got bricks from the New Era Club. I was passing the New Era Club. They were tearing it down. The New Era Club was where us locals loved to go on the weekends. And I've got those bricks, and on those bricks, I wrote the last of the New Era Club. And I've got a piece of the floor in this little case and a piece of the mirror from behind the bar in this little case. So that's one of my favorites. But, you know, I've got pictures, and I've got a mixing board from WLAC Radio that a gentleman brought over and donated to the museum. And that's one of my favorite pieces. I've got a piano. You said one, but here I go. I've got a piano over there sitting in the front, that W.O. Smith from the W.O. Smith Music School used to teach the kids in the neighborhood.
That's amazing. Well, let's talk about the neighborhood, because to anybody who's not familiar with the history of Nashville, Jefferson Street, as we're going to talk about it today, no longer exists. It's just not there. And we'll get into that in a minute. What's amazing about you and your story, to my mind, we're going to talk about Jefferson Street, but we're going to spend a lot of time on you, because you're, I think, every bit a part of the fabric of that space in Nashville, and it's an important one. So you're born in East Nashville in 1943. Describe East Nashville in that area. What was that area like in Nashville in the 1940s, 1950s, 1960s?
Well, we lived in a little area not too far from the Cumberland River. And it was a mixed area. Our neighbors were black and white, and we were like family, even during that years of segregation. But over there where we lived, you know, we didn't see the color thing so much. When I was coming up as a kid, we used to spend the night at Bubba Fields. That was my friend's name. And we used to spend the night at Bubba's, and he used to spend the night with us. And I remember Bubba Fields, they had, it looked sort of like a farm. It was sort of like a farm. They had a couple of cows and a lot of chickens, and they had a pony that we used to ride when we went down to Bubba's. It was just a close-knit community back then, and we didn't have, you know, a lot of fights and all of that kind of stuff. We had a field right next to my house where we live. And that field, we put a basketball goal up on a tree. And the basketball goal was a banana basket, a basket, you know, a fruit basket. And that was what we made our basketball goals out of. So we figured out how to enjoy life with very little.
Kids make do. You lived in an extended family in your grandmother's house that included siblings and grandparents and uncle, I think you said. Describe the house that you grew up in.
Oh, the house was just a little, it had four rooms. On the left side of the house, there were a room and then the kitchen right behind it. And on the right side, and it had two doors like a duplex, but it just made a circle around the house. It really wasn't a duplex. And on this side, on the right side, there were a front room. And that was where my grandmother slept. And she somewhat adopted my cousin. And he was in, had a little twin bed in the corner. And this room was probably 12 by 12. We slept. Now, I slept with my granddad a lot of times in the back room behind this front room. And over here on the left side, there were two double beds in there. All my brothers and myself at times slept in one of the beds, and my mother slept in the other bed.
That's pretty close quarters.
Pretty close quarters. And my uncle had a little army cart that he used to pull out at night, and he would sleep in the kitchen.
No indoor plumbing.
No indoor plumbing, no electricity during the beginning of those years. We had little coal lamps.
Unbelievable.
Yes.
That sounds very much like my grandparents' home back in the day.
You mentioned you changed the wallpaper every year at Christmas.
Y'all, my mother loved to change that wallpaper out. And we'd have to scrape the old wallpaper off, wet it and scrape it. And she would always come up with this pretty flowery wallpaper every Christmas. That was her big thing. She may have missed one or two, but that was her thing, was to wallpaper that room.
I love the story, Ed, that you come from pretty meager beginnings, but you can tell just by that one thing, that your mother changed the wallpaper. She took pride in her home and created a home, it sounds like, for your extended family.
Really? Yes, she did. She was a very, very good lady.
Your nickname was Fats. Where did that come from? I've met you. You're not.
Well, it's hard to mention that and my mother at the same time because she had to born a 12-pound baby.
Oh, my.
That's how I got the name Fats.
Gotcha. Describe your parents for me. You called your mother by her first name. You didn't call her mom or mother. You called her by her first name. Tell me about your parents.
My mother, my grandmother was very loving parents, you know. And my mother, as I called her, Judia. I don't know how that happened because my brothers, I had three other brothers, and my brothers called her mama, but I called her Julia. I'm not sure how that came about.
Were you the baby of the family?
Oh, I was the oldest.
Oh, okay.
So I had a lot of the responsibility of a father figure during those years. I had to quit school early. I worked at a gas station. My first job was downtown at Lonnie Young's shoe shop. I remember so vividly. I was 12 years old, and I made 50 cents a day when I went to Lonnie Young's, and we had to walk about a mile and a half to get downtown. And then I'd walk through downtown delivering shoes for Lonnie Young. He would repair shoes for Castanets, King Sloan, Harvey's, and a couple of other spots downtown, and I would deliver shoes down there.
You had a lot of jobs. You mentioned in your autobiography. Tell me a little bit about school. How did you feel about school?
Well, I loved the idea of school, but I did not attend very often because I was always somewhere working or thinking about how we're going to survive, get the next meals on the table. My mother, she worked as a cleaning person at the Stallman building downtown, and she didn't make very much money at all, just barely enough to pay the rent, and the rent was cheap back then. So she may have made $14 or $15 a week. And I remember my mother, she couldn't read, and she would make an X on the paper, and I would sign her name, which I barely myself. But
so you were working really to help the family out?
To help the family, yes.
You mentioned in the book that your father wasn't around very much. Who is your closest father figure?
Well, my granddaddy. Daddy Gurley is how we called his name.
Gurley Davis was his name.
Yeah, Gurley Davis was his real name. Yes, we called him Daddy Gurley. And he was about the closest. He was a meek kind of person. Very, very nice guy. Everybody in the neighborhood just loved him. He provided for all of his kids and grandkids, and I was one of the grandkids, and I had a couple of aunts and an uncle, and whenever the aunts would have a disagreement with their husband or their boyfriend, they would all end up at the house. And so then that doubled the amount of people that was in the house, and we'd make pallets, sleep on the floor, which we loved it. You know, to make pallets. But
you mentioned he was a really hard worker. Do you think that's where you got your work ethic from?
A lot of them, yeah, because at night he would go down to the warehouse and pull the trash and clean the bathrooms at night. But he'd get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and to go to work. And that company would supply businesses with building materials. And I remember going down to the warehouse and we'd help him to unload the boxcars because a boxcar would pull up and have a bunch of building materials and he'd have us to come down there. And although it would take two of us to pick up a 10-pound bag, because we were 7, 8 years old, 9 years old at most. But we had you know, great leadership, and none of the men that I was close to in the family was educated. It was always the women that were the more educated one. And it was my grandmother was one. She could read. A lot of them couldn't read in the family. But we survived. They survived. They raised families without having some of the skills that it takes now to just survive. I mean, just survive.
You mentioned that you worked a lot as a kid, and you mentioned Lonnie Young's shoe repair. You also worked for Mr. Hoover's Amoco station. Talk a little bit about that experience, and specifically about Billy Hoover, because I think this story speaks to an awful lot, including race relations in the 50s in Nashville.
Yeah. Well, I worked at Hoover's service station. I quit Lonnie Young's shoe shop downtown at the age of 13 and started working for Hoover's. And the reason I quit Lonnie Young's was because I had to walk so far to get to work and didn't make but a dime of 15 cents walking that far down there. And but I'd get a couple of tips. And then Mr. Young would, you know, would make sure that I got up to 50 cents before I left there in the afternoon. But when I started at Hoover's gas station, I started off making 50 cents a night, and that night covered 3 hours a night for 50 cents. And so I started working for Hoover's, and Mr. Hoover was a great gentleman. He cared a lot about us black kids that he was working. And at first we started off washing cars. And that's what we do on Saturdays and Sundays. And we worked 14 hours on Saturday and 14 hours on Sunday. So I'd make $14 for the 2 days. And I worked 28 hours.
Wow.
And so, yeah. But I was able, out of that little money, I was able to save money and buy a car at the age of 15.
You weren't old enough to drive it.
I wasn't old enough to drive it, right. And I would leave the car would sit in front of the house until I could get some of the older guys to drive. And most of them didn't have cars. And here I was 15 with a car. And, but wherever my car went, I went. So they were going to the beer joints, the beer taverns, and just hanging out, you know, would come to Jefferson Street from East Nashville and ride down. It was a thrill just to ride down Jefferson Street and ride back up. Of course, back then, gas was only about 26, 27 cents a gallon. So you could go a long ways with 50 cents. A long ways with 50 cents. You could get 2 gallons of gas and ride all day.
Mr. Washington, we have to take our first break. We'll be right back on History's Hook.
Don't go away. History's Hook with your host, Tom Price, will be right back after this brief commercial break.
At Columbia Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram Fiat, you can always count on us for a great selection of late model, low mileage, one owner vehicles. All have been thoroughly inspected and are ready to go. You can even save time and buy online with our online shopping tool. Looking to sell your vehicle? Great news! We're paying top dollar for your trade. All makes, all models, and in any condition. Trade in and trade up today. At Columbia Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram Fiat, you can count on us.
Hello, this is Rick Tillis from Tillis Jewelry. What is a full-service jeweler? Experienced staff, custom designers, in-house jewelry repairs, and beautiful jewelry. Yes, at Tillis Jewelry, we are passionate, knowledgeable, and committed to integrity. We strive to be the best in our community and in our profession. We build long-term relationships and become part of family traditions that will cross generations. We delight clients by providing an unparalleled selection, superior service, and exceptional value. Tillis Jewelry, we exceed your expectations.
American Standard Heating and Air Conditioning is built to a higher standard, so you can focus on the problems in your life that actually matter, like the stair that only creaks when everyone else in the house is asleep. American Standard Heating and Air Conditioning, built to a higher standard.
Call Davis Heating and Cooling at 931-388-2090 for all your home comfort needs. Davis Heating and Cooling is your local American Standard dealer and proudly serves the Maury County area. Find Davis Heating and Cooling online and on Facebook or call today, 388-2090.
Are you thinking about a new fence? Maybe you need a pole barn. Then you should give Sands Fence Company a call. That's 931-309-1644. Will Sands has built his business based on the principles of honesty, quality, and integrity. Sands Fence Company has been in business for over 20 years, providing the community with farm, residential, and commercial fencing, as well as pole barns and buildings. Call today for a free estimate. Sands Fence Company, 931-309-1644. 931-309-1644.
This is Dr. Dominic Mancini from the Dr. Gill Center. Have you been injured in a car accident? Are you still in pain? Untreated whiplash injuries to the spine may lead to future conditions, such as neck pain, low back pain, and headaches. The doctors at the Dr. Gill Center specialize in detecting and treating these conditions before they get worse. Our accident consultations are free. Call me, painfree.com, or call 615-551-9224.
Debbie Matthews grew up and lives in beautiful Columbia, Tennessee. As a realtor, she is well-versed in homes, neighborhoods, development, and schools. She wants to share her love of her home state with others to help them find just the right place to raise a family, open a business, or develop a dream. From luxury listings to land, she can handle it all. She is the current leading producer, Nashville Realty Group. Contact Debbie Matthews Realtor at 615-476-3224. That's 615-476-3224.
We all live very busy lives. Sometimes we just need a break. Wouldn't it be nice to have an extra pair of hands to help out? Let me introduce you to New Dawn Cleaning Service. No job is too big or too small because they do it all, from residential to commercial. They offer standard cleaning, construction cleaning, carpet shampooing, and window cleaning. Whether you are looking for a one-time service or regular schedule cleaning plan, New Dawn is ready to help. With years of experience, you can relax, kick back, and call New Dawn Cleaning Service at 615-977-6901.
History's Hook with your host, Tom Price, is back. Take it away, Tom.
Brothers and sisters, it's a wildest song making, sir. If you want to have some soul, if you want to be a witness, I want you to listen while I testify. Maybe I can help you to get some soul and be a witness, baby. You want to be a witness?
Welcome back to History's Hook. That was the Isley Brothers featuring Jimi Hendrix as a backup guitarist. We're going to talk a little bit about him. We have with us today, joining us via phone, Mr. Lorenzo Washington, who's the curator of the Jefferson Street Sound Museum in Nashville. Mr. Washington, we were talking about your growing up years in Nashville. You made a wonderful segue into you getting a car, which you weren't old enough to drive, but you got your older buddies to drive it around for you. And that was really your first trip down Jefferson Street. Amazing. So about how old were you when you first went to Jefferson Street?
Now, backing up just a little bit. Now, when I first went to Jefferson Street, I was a kid. During those 7-8 years we used to go a walk from Wichita to Hattie Park on 28th and Jefferson. So it would be 5, 6, 7 of us kids on Saturday mornings going to Hattie Park to learn how to swim. Mm-hmm. And that's where we learned how to swim at, was Hattie Park at 28th and Jefferson. So it goes back to there, and with us walking down Jefferson Street on Saturday morning And we would see folk out there cleaning up the yards. We would see kids picking up bulbs and picking up trash out of the yards, because a lot of the residents had fish fries and cookouts on Friday night. And so they'd be out there cleaning up, getting ready for the rest of the day on Friday. So that's where it really started, when we started going to Jefferson Street and going to Farmer's Market. My mother would go to Farmer's Market on some Fridays or Saturday mornings. But we took the trip to 28th and Jefferson to learn how to swim at Hadley Park. And then later is when I started working these other jobs and got the car and was having fun with friends, you know, hanging out. We didn't really just hang out on Jefferson, but we rode Jefferson. And we might would hang out down at the farmer's market. Sometimes different ones would congregate down at farmer's market at 8th and Jefferson.
So describe Jefferson Street. We remember it as sort of the center of really influential music in Nashville. Separate from the country music scene that was going on elsewhere in the city, Jefferson Street sort of had its own thing. Describe Jefferson Street and its music scene. Who owned the businesses, and what were some of the businesses that you would find there?
Now, on Jefferson Street, back in those days, it was over 600, almost 700 different businesses, homes, universities on Jefferson Street. We had clothing stores, flower shops, car lots. We had shoe repair shops. We had, churches, hospitals, funeral homes, bakeries, some of insurance companies. So some of whatever you would need to survive in a community, we had on Jefferson Street.
So it was a thriving street. In Nashville, predominantly black-owned businesses?
Predominant. Now, it was a couple of Jews that had clothing stores on Jefferson, and the biggest grocery stores was owned by whites over there on Jefferson, but 98% of the businesses over there were owned by black influential folk that were. Jefferson Street was what we called our Black Wall Street. It was a lot of money flowing on Jefferson Street. The business owners over there gave a lot of folk jobs. You know, there were a lot of jobs on Jefferson Street and in the North Nashville community because of the black wealth that had taken place, you know, in North Nashville.
You mentioned in the book that in 1958 to 1960, you were going downtown and saw some of the civil rights protesting taking place. You recalled sit-ins at lunch counters. And did you take part in them?
Well, at Woolworth, because hardly none of the local guys and gals was involved with the sit-ins. But I was always ambitious. And when I did go down there and stand across from Woodworth and see the activity going on in the restaurant, I always said that I was going to be a part of that set-in. But being that I wasn't a college student, I wasn't embedded into that group that was protesting down there. But as it got closer to the end, I did go in there. I got my nerves up to go in Woodworth, and I sat on the stool. And that was gratifying to me. Just to be a part of that movement. And when none of my local friends were involved in that at all, they weren't even thinking about it so much. But I gave it a lot of thought, and I did accomplish one of my dreams, were to be a part of the city.
Did you feel connected to the bigger story that was unfolding at the time?
I did. And that was the only way I was going to have that feeling of connection, was to actually be a part of it. And I did that. So I've got that story right now. You know, that story has lasted and is being asked, you know, about me and my involvements in the sit-ins.
Your friend Herbert Hunter was a musician who played on Jefferson Street. He seemed to be your entree into the music scene. Tell us a little bit about him and what he meant to you.
Oh, Herbert and I were good buddies from about the age of 5 or 6 years old. But Herbert could always sing. You know, he was a good singer. He wasn't grand on the dancing now. I think I hit there. But the singing, man, he could wail. The age of 10 or 12 years old, my uncle put a quartet together, and I was his favorite nephew. And Herbert was one of the lead singers in the quartet. And Herbert, you know, really enjoyed having me up there on stage with the quartet. But my uncle, the gentleman that put the quartet together, he would come over to me and say, now, they call me Fats, you know, even back then. And he would say, Fats, I want you to sing baritone. Now, I want you to sing baritone, but I want you to sing real low. he never wanted me to want my voice to identify in the quartet.
What was the name of the quartet?
I honestly can't remember the name of the quartet because we went to Mount Bethel Church. Okay. And I don't know whether he, because he was a deacon at Mount Bethel, and he sang in one of the quartets at Mount Bethel. But I can't remember the actual name of the quartet. And it was just us local guys, and I was his only family member in the quartet. I do know Reverend Owen Hunter, and that was Herbert's dad. He was a minister also at the church. But I can't remember the name. But I do remember him telling me a number of times, I want you to sing real. Oh, and that real, I think that real was going to ever end, you know.
Interspersed among those 600 plus businesses on Jefferson were a series of clubs, some which were a little bit notorious, others that went on to great fame. Here's some of the names. They're wonderful. The Tiki Lounge, Gantz Club, The Flame Room, Hap Holidays Club, Brute Hayes Club, The Zanzibar, The Voters Club, Club Revelot. You mentioned the New Era, the Club Baron, the Del Morocco Club. Those are clubs interspersed all along Jefferson Street. What different genres of music were being played, and who are some of the musicians that you might get to hear down there?
Now, up and down Jefferson Street, you know, you had all of those different clubs and bars. All of them weren't clubs. Some of them were just bars, and some of them was just beer joints, you know, just straight-up beer joints. And, you know, my friend Herbert got discovered, and he made himself discovered. Ted Jarrett, it was a little restaurant, a little Meet and Three that was right there at 18th and Jefferson, right down from 18th a little bit, between the Ritz Theater and 18th and Jefferson. And Herbert found out that Ted Jarrett would go in that little restaurant just about every day and have lunch. So what Herbert did when because they would always play the jukebox, and when they put the money in the jukebox and play the records, Herbert would stand outside the door of the restaurant and sing to the record that was playing in order to try to get Ted Jarrett's attention, because he knew that Ted could have been the gateway to his future. And Herbert was, I think, almost 17 or 17 back then, and he was very crafty, you know, for him to go and stand in front of that door and sing to the music that they were playing on the jukebox, I think was a smart gesture. And Herbert ended up getting picked up by Ted Jarrett. Ted Jarrett did some writing for him, came up with a couple of songs, and by the time he was 17, almost 18 years old, he had a record on the radio. So that got him involved more with the music. And then all of the other restaurants and clubs, you know, and I go to the Club Stillaway, which was the Revelot, Club Revelot at one time. The Club Stillaway was one of the local spots where a lot of the local folk like Fred Waters, the Imperials, different groups would hang out and play at the Revelot, and what we ended up calling it, which the name changed to the Club Stillaway. And some of everybody played there, like Joe Tex, James Brown, Ike and Tina Turner. It was just many different names that played in all of these different clubs. And it was jazz in one club down the street here. The Browns Hotel was jazz, basically jazz. The Browns Hotel on Jefferson was one of the more exclusive restaurants on Jefferson. And as I tell my story at times, and I heard this from folk like Watt Watson, that the Browns Hotel and restaurant, dinner club, rather, they were the only club on Jefferson Street that served you with and had cloth napkins. Everybody else had paper napkins, but that place, Brown's Dinner Club, was so exclusive. People like Nat King Cole stayed in that hotel, because that was the more exclusive hotel on the street. Muhammad Ali, Joe Louis, the boxer, Jackie Robinson, the great home run hitter. All these folk, when they come to Nashville, stayed at the Browns Hotel because it was during the Jim Crow area, segregation, you know, and they couldn't stay in the hotels and eat at the restaurants downtown. So all of the action in those days came to Jefferson Street. Ella Fitzgerald, you know, Louis Armstrong, all of the real action was on Jefferson Street during those early years. And you had a variety of music that you could go and listen to. And it was about the blues and jazz and R&B, you know, we had it all.
That little clip that we played had Jimi Hendrix playing in the background. Really, Jefferson Street is his start, right? That's where he makes his bones.
Well, that was, yeah, because he and Johnny Jones, he met Johnny Jones, and Johnny Jones told me this himself, that he met Jimi Hendrix in Clarksville, that there was this little club in Clarksville that they played at every week, and Jimi Hendrix used to come to the club and listen to him. And he said that one night he was in there, Jimi Hendrix came in, and they were getting ready to take a break. And this is has been on all kind of little specials and stuff, that Jimi Hendrix, when they would take a break, Jimi Hendrix would come up to the stage and want to tingle with his guitar. And but Johnny said that, you know, he was a little reluctant of Jimi Hendrix tingling with his guitar, because when he handed Jimi Hendrix his guitar, Jimi Hendrix turned the guitar upside down and put it on his leg. And he said that was kind of concerning for somebody to turn my guitar upside down to play. And he was concerned about that. So, but there's all kind of stories, you know, that took place. And a lot of different artists put their footprints on Jefferson Street by way of the Chitlin' Circuit. You know, that happened. And the Chitlin' Circuit was a circuit that a lot of artists and musicians had a chance to travel around the country, especially the Southeast. And they would go from city to city and play work. They would have work to they would have places to stay. But Nashville was one of the more favorite spots, because Nashville, we had Soul Train. I mean, not Soul Train, but Night Train.
Night Train, right.
We had Night Train, yeah. And we had WLAC Radio, which carried the music across the country. They said at late at night, I've had a couple of my buddies that was in Vietnam to come to Nashville, to come home. And they said that you could hear WLAC radio all the way over in Vietnam. So it was a powerful 50,000 watt station that traveled around the country. And the artists and musicians was hearing this music coming out of Nashville from all over the country. So that was one of the attractions that we had here that they, did, that they didn't have in a lot of other cities. And plus we had the first black variety TV show, Night Train, here in Nashville. So that was attractive to artists and musicians. And in Nashville, we had all of the action on Jefferson Street with the three HBCU colleges of Fisk University, Meharry Medical College, and Tennessee State, Tennessee A&I State University. So we had all of this going on here on Jefferson Street and in North Nashville.
We're going to talk a little bit more about the larger influence of Jefferson Street when we come back. We need to take our second break right now. We'll be right back on History's Hook.
Don't go away. History's Hook with your host, Tom Price, will be right back after this brief commercial break.
Hi, I'm Robert Rogers at Parks Motor Sales Buick GMC. Parks Motor Sales was founded by my granddad, Bobby Parks, and my great-granddad, Julian Mays, in 1958. We've been family-owned the whole time, and being family-owned, locally-owned, means you get to get your next vehicle or your existing vehicle serviced by the same people who stand in the grocery line with you, drop their kids off at the same school you do, and smile and are happy to see you when they do. So come see us at Parks Motor Sales in Columbia, Tennessee on 919 Nashville Highway or parksmotorsales.com.
I'm Barbara Lincoln with Holland's Pharmacy. We have advertised with WKRM and WKOM for the past several years and found it to be very successful. I highly recommend advertising with them if you have a local business like ours. We're located at 1608 Hatcher Lane here in Columbia. We're open Monday through Friday from 8 to 6 and Saturdays from 8 to 2. Stop by Holland's for all your prescription needs where we have fast, friendly, courteous service. We custom fit support hose for you also. Thanks for supporting Holland's and WKRM and WKOM.
Hi, I'm Steve, the garbage man. Are you new to Maury County? We want to welcome you and your family. We are a local residential garbage service, and we want to be your garbage man. We've been around for over 30 years, so we have a reputation. Check us out at garbagemaninc.com or call Mike at 931-540-0919. You could also ask your neighbor. 931-540-0919.
For 40 years, the Jewelers Bench has worked hard for their customers and provided the highest quality jewelry at the best price. They keep going back. Recent renovations have allowed them to expand their inventory. More high quality jewelry, custom vintage and estate pieces, and professional jewelry and watch repairs. They also buy gold. The Jewelers Bench, still here, still great service. 808 Trotwood Avenue, Columbia.
Every morning, I park my car across the street from my business, and I can't wait to get in there. That's pretty common for small business owners. We have the added satisfaction, however, of guiding hundreds of families with their retirement, education, savings, and general investments. We're a locally owned business that tries very hard to simplify a complicated world. This is Monty Sneed from Caledonian Financial in historic downtown Columbia.
Securities and investment advisory services offered through NBC Securities Incorporated, member FINRA and SIPC. Columbia Foodland is a locally owned and operated family grocery store with a full line of dry, dairy, frozen, meat, and produce items. We focus on keeping the freshest hand-cut meat and produce items daily with the most competitive prices in town. We offer weekly ad specials as well as in-store weekly specials throughout the store. Located at 427 West 7th Street in Columbia in the former Harris Foodland location. Columbia Foodland. We are here and ready to serve the wonderful people of Columbia and the surrounding areas. History's Hook with your host, Tom Price, is back. Take it away, Tom.
Well,
And welcome back to History's Hook. That's Come On Dance Dance, which is a disco tune that was produced in part by our guest today, Mr. Lorenzo Washington, who is the curator now of the Jefferson Street Sound Museum. We're talking about the influence of Jefferson Street on American music. Some big musicians played on Jefferson Street in Nashville back in the 1950s and 60s. People like B.B. King and Aretha Franklin, Etta James, Ray Charles, Marvin Gaye. We've talked about Jimi Hendrix already. Just a quick story about my introduction to Jefferson Street. Not being from here, it was a revelation to me. Pretty incredible, these stories that are coming out of this really relatively small space in Nashville, Tennessee, and so influential on the American music scene. I came about it sort of in a sideway view. One of the archives patrons, his name is Ron Johnson, documents cemeteries in Murray County, goes to various cemeteries just documenting who's buried there. And he came across a cemetery in Murray County called Chavers Cemetery. And he discovered the grave of a man named Theodore Acklin, who's known as Uncle Teddy, who, while a student at Tennessee A&I, which is now TSU, opened the Del Morocco Club. Now, Acklin was a former professional baseball player. He'd played in the Negro Leagues back in the 1930s, and he opened this club. He turned the second floor into one of those high-end dining rooms, which he called the Blue Room. His wife, Muffy Walker Acklin, was a former dancer who had worked with Nat King Cole. She was a hairstylist at Joyce's House of Glamour, where no less than Aretha Franklin and Etta James got their hair done prior to their shows at the Del Morocco Club. What do you know about the Del Morocco, Mr. Washington?
Well, the Del Morocco was one of the more influential clubs on Jefferson Street. A lot of great names stopped in the Del Morocco. Jimi Hendrix, of course, as you said, we've spoken of him. But that was his home for a little over a year. He and Billy Cox, when Billy Cox brought Jimi Hendrix to Nashville by way of Clarksville, Tennessee, where they were paratroopers in the Army. Those guys came to Nashville and became a part of this music scene here on Jefferson Street. There were a number of other musicians and artists like Annan Board Sam. Annan Board Sam was a great musician. He didn't make the fame that Jimi Hendrix made, but he showed us a lot of good times in that Morocco. We had Duke Ellington played that club. James Brown played that club. B.B. King also played that club. Everybody played the Del Morocco. And it was one thing about the clubs in Nashville. You could get a job. You could get work at these clubs because the owners didn't want the same artist playing every week for months. You know, even at the, they had Jimi Hendrix there, but they would bring another artist or group upstairs, and Jimi Hendrix may be playing downstairs, but they still had different faces and names in the club so that it wouldn't get bored. And you wouldn't get bored going. So the Del Morocco was one of the more favorite clubs, especially to the folks that had a little bit of money, because all the clubs at that time had gambling rooms in them. And a lot of white club owners and bar owners used to sneak in the Del Morocco. They come in the back door to go to the gambling rooms in order to, you know, just come over on Jefferson Street and have a good time. And then there was another group that used to come down to the Club Baron, a white group from downtown Prentice Alley. A gentleman used to bring them over on Jefferson Street about every 3 or 4 months, and he'd get a bus and have a whole busload of white patrons come into the Club Baron, and they'd have entertainment like B.B. King might be playing, or Little Richard may be playing. They'd have those kinds of acts playing when they brought the whites to Jefferson Street. And they had been hearing about and knew about all of this great music over on Jefferson Street and good time. So they wanted to be a part of all of that.
There are two revelations that came to me, two big points that I think we want to make during this show. One is that one of the reasons why Jefferson Street was so influential musically has to do with its location, which you already mentioned. You had several historically black universities that were there who were bringing students and educated folks from all over the country. And then you had that local influence too, those people like you who were – you know, very much ensconced in Nashville and Tennessee society. Talk a little bit about that for just a second, about the sort of the amalgamation of all of those things that create Jefferson Street.
Yeah, well, on Jefferson Street wasn't, or North Nashville wasn't just a local thing, because you had all of these students coming in from all over the country and other parts of the world, Africa, Europe. You had folk coming from everywhere to Jefferson Street. And so that, you know, that melting pot was tremendous in North Nashville and on Jefferson Street. And the clubs and the club owners, you know, they thrive on all of these nationalities coming to Jefferson Street. So we had, we didn't have a lot of problems back then, you know, during those days. So the influence that that Jefferson Street had on people, not so much the influence that people had on Jefferson Street, but the influence that Jefferson Street had on other people. And I say, you know, everybody from the bartenders to the club owners to the students to the locals, everybody that actually stepped their foot on Jefferson Street left their footprint, and they have a story. So there's many, many, many stories out there about Nashville, Jefferson Street, North Nashville, that's being told around the world. Because Jefferson Street was such a historical landmark, and it was, you know, it was our life of Jefferson Street. It was our history, and that's what I'm doing now, is trying to keep that history out front and alive. And I think what took place over here on Jefferson Street and the music should be a part of a curriculum in the schools. That we should be able to teach the students about the legacy that they have that's not being told.
I agree 100%. Another revelation to me, and this is an interesting one, at least in my mind, was that during the era of segregation, we often think about segregation separate but equal. It was never that, that African-Americans really sort of got the short shrift when it came to that, that they couldn't go to white-owned establishments. Here's where it gets flipped on Jefferson Street. These are black-owned establishments. These are black-only businesses, and white people couldn't go. And boy, did they want to. You mentioned in the book, some white music lovers resorted to wearing dark makeup so they could sneak in to listen to the music. That's an amazing story.
Right, right, right. But they felt a part of this music scene, because it was the music that they were listening to on the radio, but they couldn't they didn't have a chance to actually be a part of that scene. And so they wanted to be here. That's just like one of the gentlemen, one of the musicians who were one of the first white musicians to come over here on Jefferson in 61 or 62. And he played at the Club Stillaway on Jefferson Street. And he told me out of his own mouth that in the summertime, he would get one of the darkest suntans that he could get. And he would put makeup on it. He would stand in back of the stage as far back from the front as he could and play, because they loved his playing. He played with so much soul and they loved it. And so he told me that story himself.
Mr. Washington, unfortunately, we're out of time. We have so many more stories to tell. The beauty of this story is that you can learn these stories. There is a legacy to Jefferson Street, which sadly no longer exists in the manner in which we're speaking about it. Over 300 homes, businesses, and even churches were demolished to make I-40, which runs through Nashville now. But you can learn about it by visiting the Jefferson Street Sound Museum, visiting Mr. Washington at that spot. That's all for this edition of History's Hook. I'd like to thank our guest, Lorenzo Washington. You can find his autobiography, Rising Above, on Amazon.com. You can shake his hand at the Jefferson Street Sound Museum, located at 2004 Jefferson Street in Nashville, Tennessee. We end today's show not with a quote, but with a song. What better song than one that exemplifies how we feel about our guest today? Respect, by the Queen of Soul herself, Aretha Franklin. Thanks for listening. Join us again next week as we connect history in your backyard to the world on another edition of History's Hook.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of History's Hook with your host, Tom Price. We hope you enjoyed today's show. Be sure to join us every Saturday at 9 a.m. and again at 6 p.m. right here on WKOM 101.7 FM for a journey through time.
This is Clayton Harris, and you're listening to 101.7 WKOM Columbia.
Farmer Johnny here, Taylor Family Farm. I want to give you all a little look-see. We raise 100% non-GMO grass-fed beef, pasture chicken, and pork on our family farm. Everything that we grow is raised with love and care to ensure the highest quality and nutrition for our family and customers. You can shop online at TaylorFamilyFarmTN.com or visit our farm store in person at Etheridge, Tennessee at 301 Dave Reisner Road. That's TaylorFamilyFarmTN.com for more information.
Hello, my name is Connor Mims. My wife Bradley and I live in Columbia, Tennessee in Riverside. I am a deck and porch builder and my wife is a second grade teacher at Riverside Elementary. My specialty is designing and building elegant and comfortable porches and decks. Let me work with you to design and build the porch or deck of your dreams. Give us a call today from our website, MimsModernLandscape.com. That's MimsModernLandscape.com, and check out what we have to offer. Thanks.
Hello, my name is Zach Maddox. I'm a proud third-generation owner-operator of Columbia Paint and Wall Cover, founded by my grandfather, Ralph Maddox, in 1946. Now I am honored to continue the legacy as owner-operator today. We offer a variety of paint and wall covering products, but our passion is customer service. We can offer many personalized services and can come out to your house or business if needed. Visit us at our store downtown Columbia at 1114 Carmack Boulevard or online at paintcolumbia.com.
Hey, this is Jonathan Castile, a.k.a. John Boy, with John Boy's Handyman Service. One call and we'll handle it all. Truly means we'll handle it all. From pressure washing your house to doing remodeling, we're licensed, insured, and bonded. So rest assured, John Boy will handle it all. You can contact me at 931-242-7620 or my email, CastileJonathan10@gmail.com.
This is Tripp Stoltz with Columbia Ace Hardware. I love listening to 101.7 WKOM FM, Columbia, Tennessee.